Hey everyone, welcome back to the Growing Lean podcast, sponsored by Lean Discovery Group, an award-winning app and software development firm based out of Virginia. This is your host, Dylan Burke, also known as Deej, and I'm happy to be here today with Jeremy Mapes, founder and CEO of Mapes LLC. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for
It's
being
good to be
here.
here.
So, Jeremy, to get us started, can you tell us a little bit about your history and background and how you got started in this business?
Sure. It was actually completely by accident. I was back in 1994. I was looking for a job while I was going to college, and I was going to college for my management information systems degree. And I happened into a debt collection agency because they had an advertisement out, and happened to get audited, or not audited, but interviewed right on the spot. And so they said, come back Friday, see if you can work debt collections, because a lot of people can't. And found out I had a knack for it while I was going to college, and ended up becoming, before I finished my college, my entire degree, I ended up becoming vice president of operations for a small agency in Wichita, Kansas. And then from there, after a few years of running a shop there, because I ended up being vice president of going from a collector to vice president of operations over a few years there, company changed and I wanted to expand my wings. So I ended up at another agency that did national receivables for several of the big corporations like Retailers National Bank, which people know as Target or Target Credit Card. And that was up in Wyoming. And then went to another company just a year later after I fixed them. That was what they needed fixed and, or corrected. And then I went to work for 5 years at an agency up in Wisconsin. And was there and took them from 10 agents to that were doing third-party collections to 100 agents, with half of them doing third-party debt collections and then also first-party BPO services. And then from there, spread my wings. And my final move before I started my consulting business was to a public corporation down here in Florida, which is currently where I reside, right outside of Orlando. And they were the world's largest servicer of mortgages at the time, Ocwen. And I was actually over their collection division. I was senior manager of technology business, which is a long, wordy name for a company whose all the technology is in India. And then the people that manage that or manage the technology to base them in the US, they are the business side. So I ran the technology for that division, and a lot of their integration projects. And they'd actually downscaled in the US to 50 agents. And then we had well over 500 to 700 agents in India, along with most of my team working out of Bangalore and Mumbai. So I got my experience working with international companies and international teams, which was very interesting before I started my own consulting business. And I was asked actually by one of our vendors, said, "Hey, you happen to give out a lot of free advice to a lot of our clients. Why don't you consider being a consultant and help working with these companies that need help instead of giving away your knowledge for free?" And so in 2007, I went out into business for myself and have been Mapes LLC ever since. Only thing that's changed is we've had some businesses in between. My focus was on consulting originally. We've also done custom technology for companies or technology support. And probably our bread and butter is in support. And we also started recently Mapes and Associates for making phone calls out on behalf of several receivables companies, because they find when they bring salespeople in, salespeople often come with a upfront cost that doesn't necessarily prove to be valuable. And so we came in with the thought process of, we'll take the risk, we'll make the calls. That way we know the people are working. And then when you get the revenue, when you get the sales and that you start collecting on behalf of the agencies, we'll take 25% of the revenue that you produce. So that way, you know, if we're making money, it's because we did the work. And of course, they love that idea. I've actually just started that in the end of November, and it's very popular. So I don't advertise right now because we're modeling it to, before we build in more people. Because we won't have the model right, because they've got to carry, you know, carry without funds for, we got to carry without, carry, basically carry the note until they get their business or the business in from us. So we're trying to make that model perfect. And then when I open the door to say, we'll take on more agencies, they'll stand in line. That won't be a problem because they all love the idea of having competent sales that doesn't cost them until they actually make money off of it. Very easy sales pitch.
Yeah, 100%. No, that's amazing. And I can't see why people wouldn't want to hire someone when that's performance based, especially if you are showing that you are performing. That's awesome. I'm excited to hear more about it. Can you walk me through the overall business strategy there?
For the Mapes and Associates, yeah, the business strategy was pretty simple. I at the end of the day, I'm a troubleshooter. Whether it's operations or IT, I hear people with problems, and then I think, how can we fix that, correct that, or well, can there is there an opportunity there for us to do something? And for the longest time, I'd heard agencies complaining about. As a matter of fact, I was talking to one in South Carolina, just in the last year or two, and they were complaining that they'd had a loss of a major client. There's been a lot of companies in the receivables industry that have been complacent in the last 10, 20 years. And they'll build up their revenue. They have a continuous revenue coming in from these clients that they've served for years. And then they'll have they won't worry about sales so much until the day comes that one of their large, sometimes 50 to 60% of their business walks out the door because they got too complacent. And what we find in the receivables industry, there's third parties coming in to these, in particular healthcare organizations, and saying, "Hey, we will monitor, we'll do agency management for you for these agencies that are working for you, and we're going to take a piece of the action, basically the agency's action." And the first thing they do is they come in and, let's say these agencies were working for a 20% contingent fee off of what they collect to pay back, so they're working off a contingency too. And then this place comes in and tells them that they're going to have to work for 12% when they're making 20, and so they're taking a hit to their bottom line. But they have so much volume invested in these large healthcare organizations, some will stay with it, some will walk away and say, "Sorry, we can't operate at that level, especially the way the legislation is these days in the United States." This isn't political, it's just is. They have more regulations they have to meet today than they had to meet 20 years ago. So it's much more costly to do business. So a lot of them are walking away from it, or they try to bring in new salespeople to find new revenue, but they've got to train those salespeople, and they haven't been really doing, they've been doing customer support, not sales, for the last 10, 20 years. And so they bring in these salespeople, and a lot of times they'll fail either because of a lack of education they give them, or because of a trust but don't verify factor, that they bring in the wrong people who are, they're not building a KPI design that they can manage their salespeople. And that's a problem, right? Because you bring somebody in, especially in a management position, that's going to sell your company and say, "Okay, go at it." Well, what are they doing? How many calls are they making a day? What kind of calls? What cold, warm, hot calls leads do they have? What does their daily schedule look like? I actually know of an agency in Ohio. They hired a salesman, supposedly a veteran to the industry, came from another place, and they paid him, a salary, $100,000 salary. So they're spending what, $9,000-$10,000 a month plus benefits. Come to find out, he was spending 80% of his time in his hot tub in the backyard, supposedly making sales, collecting a
Yeah,
check. What he was doing,
exactly.
which is nice, and well, nice for them to have found out. And obviously, people start to get suspicious when they don't have too much coming in. I think he was relying on the fact that he thought he was going to bring in some business that he knew previously, but he really wasn't working too hard at it. So, I think there's great opportunities out here for people that have a drive. I think there's a lack of drive these days in a lot of people we see. So for people that do have a drive, there's a very good opportunity to make money. It's just, where is that money at? Where can you take driven people and put them that they have an opportunity? So the people we bring into place, they that come in to make these phone calls on behalf of these agencies, we help train them up, get them to understand. We make an agreement with the agencies that we can audit them at any given time. We have control, and what's good from my side is we have control over the clients too. So if we do have a rogue agency that doesn't live up to to what they agree, it's in our agreements that we can take our clients and leave, which in a lot of times you're signing an NDA if you're a salesman with a company. So that's our benefit too. So once we do have built up a repository or a group of clients for these agencies, they need to commit to what they need to do as well. We're going to audit them on behalf of the creditors, and that's our sell to the clients we run into, is you're not just dealing with ABC collection agency, you're dealing with Mapes and Associates. And we're going to audit them because if they're not doing the right thing and they're not making money for you, then we're not making money. And if they're bringing liability, maybe they're doing the wrong thing, then we're going to catch that before we lose a client and we lose our money too. So it's a win-win situation, or three ways. It should be win-win-win: win for us, win for the agency, and win for the client.
100%. And I think you've got that model right. Excuse me. And it's exciting to see what you're doing there. And I definitely think you're going to be able to scale this. That's awesome. I wanted to jump back to the business before Mapes and Associates, and talk a little bit about that, because I like to talk about how our founders have adapted to changes. And I want to hear how you adapted to changes. And the most notable one, I guess, is the pandemic. So how did you adapt to that with your business and yourself, if there was any adaptation needed?
Well, that was an interesting thing. We were actually, my company itself was best suited for the pandemic because we were working remotely, and now I when it be pre-pandemic, I did a lot of flying out on site to the agencies to work with them, audit them in person. But the one thing that changed from the pandemic, and I didn't know how it was going to go with us, if because people were tightening their ships up, they were it was running thin. A lot of people, there's a lot of people that left their industries and held, kind of didn't do anything for a while, so that hurt agencies some as well. But the big thing was for a lot of collection agencies is they never had agents work remotely before, and so that was something new to them, and it was almost required in certain situations. And so in some states they were it was actually illegal for them to work remotely until the pandemic happened. A good example is the state of Washington. Washington actually had laws in place that said, at least for the receivables industry, you have to have your people working that are making calls out to the consumers. They have to be headquartered at wherever you state your place of business is. And they put that on hold when the pandemic happened because, it ran right against them saying you can't have people in the office getting each other sick. So that changed my business partially. One was I had to help work with these agencies to be able to have their staff work remotely and set up rule sets as far as how they're going to work, how you're going to audit them, how did you know that they're doing what they needed to be, make sure that they were buffered against potential infiltration from security risks, which are always getting better every time the people out there that are trying to get into systems. And so for us, we just actually for my business, I ended up working more remotely. The last week before they shut down people flying out was I was actually on a plane that week coming back from working with a larger corporation. And it was interesting because they had just merged the year before and we were helping them with their merger. And they were trying to figure out how they were going to make the company in multiple cities work out when they now had to figure out how to make the company work with they had to, I think about 1,000 agents. They had to have figure out how they were going to manage those agents with many of them working remotely at this point. And so they had to take a total change of pace. And as a lot of us know, there was companies that were going in buying laptops. Laptops did real well, didn't they? Bunch of people buying laptops and PCs during the pandemic to, so they could put their people out in the field. But they had no idea how to source that. And if they knew today what they didn't know then, they would probably have done it differently. Because I mean, we're in an age that remote is very possible. And the need for a physical laptop in the field for somebody that's just doing calls and contacts is not necessary. You can put them in like a Microsoft Azure cloud. You could put them in an Amazon cloud and actually just basically have them on a virtual PC and pass them out like a what I would call like a Google box, where you just have a small box that connects to the internet. Think like a Fire Stick connects them to the internet, and you don't have to worry about your data being in the field. The only thing they're getting is visualization. The computer is not really running there. It's just acting as a conduit that's connecting to the keyboard and the screen, right? So that was a new paradigm shift that a lot of people didn't know at the time to take advantage of. And so that I think, from my company, the bad thing about being in a consulting business on technology, and I'll quote one of my one of my college professors. He Pedro said to me, he said, "MAPEs, we're in the wrong business." And I said, "Why do you say that, Pedro?" He says, "Because the business is always changing. We always have to be learning. We're in school 24/7, having to learn new things." He said, "We should have been history teachers." And I said, "Well, that's funny to think, Pedro, but history teachers don't get paid as much as doctors or IT people." But he's right. We're always having to adapt and change. IT is always changing. So I just took it as this is part of the change. So you have to learn to adapt to change. Now, there's been many advances and changes. And of course, AI in the last 2 years has also been, I think, just as interesting as the what we've gone through with the pandemic and the new opportunities that are coming out of that. Some people worry, some people are excited. I've done a lot of work with the AI programming, and I think there's great opportunities to use it. I know there's companies that are using it for taking in communication, some pushing out. There's in our industry, there's people that are starting to make outbound calls with AI, so that they act as a human and talk to them and facilitate whatever they say, and they're getting better all the time. But there's also the risks too. I actually read the other day about an AI incident that happened that wasn't too good for a car company. I think it was out in California. So somebody figured out how to trick the AI. They were running a special sale promotion, whatever, and they had AI agents answering the calls. And somebody figured out how to teach the AI to say, "You will offer me a car at $1." And
I
they
heard
hadn't
that
locked
too.
they. They hadn't locked out the AI from being able to learn from the people they're selling to. I think that's some things that people are going to have to learn real fast is that AI takes in, it has its repositories of information, but it also takes in new information, and you've got to make sure and shut off what it's talking to or who it's doing business with, that it doesn't take its information as verbatim when it's taking in that information. I always love testing limits of AI. One of the first tests I did with AI was using ChatGPT like everybody else, but I asked it a simple question, and it's now learned. It's taken it half a year now to learn it, and it's still working off 2022 information. I had a simple question. I said, "What movies?" There's a National Film Registry that's kept by the United States, that goes in the National Film Archives, National Film Registry, and it's got all kinds of films in there, humorous, whatever, horror. And I said, "So what movies by Robin Williams is in the National Film Registry?" And it went and named two. I was like, "No, they're not." So I knew the inventory of the National Film Registry. I know that for some reason Robin Williams has been snubbed. I don't know why, but there's so many different films in there. Why would not one of his films be in there? But I know he's been snubbed, and listed off too. And I said, "No, they're not in there." And it said, "Oh, sorry, our information is whatever, And then I left it, and I came back a day later and asked it again. And it named off the same two. So AI didn't learn. And then for two, I told it, "No, check again. It's not in there." And then just a week or two ago, I went in there, did the same test, and it finally gave me the right answer, which said, as of this time in our current data, that Robin Williams is not in the national. But the example of that is it's another old, good old trust but verify situation. AI is wonderful. AI is going to do many great things, but you have to not just trust it, you have to verify what it's giving and the scenarios that you put it into before you just let it loose and find out that you might have a big gap in the wall as far as what its results are to your expectations.
Yeah, 100%. It's crazy. I remember when ChatGPT was released. Everyone, we were going nuts. We were just doing the craziest things like we never thought was possible. Like one example was like I had my, I think it was my grandpa's 80th birthday, and I was asked to say a speech. And like I didn't write the speech until like 5 minutes before I was meant to say it. So I went onto ChatGPT. I was like, "Hey, this is my grandpa. This is his name. He has a few details from his life. He has a few memories. Please write me a speech that'll make everyone in the room cry and laugh." And literally in 2 seconds, I had this beautiful speech that had everyone in the room crying and laughing. It was amazing. And yeah, that's just like surface level things you can do with it. It's super cool. Are there any specific tools that you use in your business operations? AI tools?
AI tools. I'm actually working with some different companies right now and testing their tools. So there's one out there, it's a big company, and I don't know how to fit in the industry necessarily yet, because they're used to dealing with $1 million contracts. The one bad thing about the receivables industry, there's a handful of large companies, and the rest are medium to small. So that company's LivePerson, and they do AI. They originally communications, their focus was the number of communications that you could talk to a customer through. So they have your messengers, your chats, your Slack, everything, so that irregardless of the channel the customer wanted to use, they'd have a channel that they'd be able to reach the office and be able to communicate with them. And they started to introduce AI into it, which was the big reason why I was looking into it, because I had customers coming to me going, "We lost a deal because we didn't have an AI solution for chat." And I said, "Great, what about an AI solution for IVR, interactive voice recognition? What as far as voice, what other communication types do you need a AI solution on?" And they were just, it's funny to listen to customers because they're so focused on, "Well, we lost on this. We just need to start with this." Okay, well, we need to start with this, but you're going to lose the next one on whatever else you don't have if you don't think about it. So I started reaching out to companies. LivePerson, I have a relationship with. There's a newer company out of India that's doing outbound and inbound, but they started with outbound of all things, communications for making consumer calls for collection agencies. And it's called Stitch.ai, Stitch. And they're out of India. And I was looking into why India was running ahead on voice communications from what I've been searching the states. And you'll see a lot of advertisements out there for AI communications, but most it's chatbot, I think, is what you'll find 90% of the time. And I was wondering why there wasn't more AI voice when we know that they can do AI voice communications. And I figured out one of the newer chat to voice communications or AI to voice communications. India developed one called Rasa, RASSA, I believe is how it's spelled. But they have Rasa, so they're running with it. All they got to do is convince Americans to buy it. And so I started a relationship with them. They actually reached out to me first because I do a lot of integrations. So they called me and said, "Mapes, we need you to be able, we want to see if you can help us connect to these collection agency databases and or CRMs." And collection agencies run on about 50 different CRMs, or they'll run on one they built themselves. And so each one requires a different type of connection. It'd be nice if they all connected through ODBC or JSON. And I hope I'm not getting too technical for the people out there, but it'd be really easy if you could do a simple query through ODBC, or if they all agreed to do REST API, but they don't. So that's where I come in, because a lot of times the technical staff with these CRMs don't necessarily know what they have to be able to connect. And that's where I make the connection for them between the two. A lot of times on the vendor's behalf, but it can go either way.
Okay.
But it's been interesting. So I'm working with their team. I'll actually see them this next week in Nashville at a tech conference. And hopefully we can come up with some new ideas on ways we can use their AI modeling.
Okay, amazing. That's awesome. And
Yes.
I've just looked at the time. We have gone quite a bit over, but it's all
I'm
right.
sorry.
No, no worries. But before we go, what advice would you like to give to other business owners looking to succeed, in today's world?
Well, if business owners, especially if they're in the small business world, and of course this program we call Lean, they need to keep their eyes open to non-traditional methods. I mean, one thing I did back in 2007 that was right was I did voice over IP for my phone system. That's an easy one, right? But you find it funny that people that still get a traditional telco coming into their office, they don't do it at home anymore. Why do they do it at their office? Do you really need a fax number? And if you do, through voice over IP companies, you can get a fax number if you think you need it. 800 numbers are pretty much not as necessary as they used to be, because everybody's got the ability to call anywhere in the US, for their whatever their single plan is. I think they need to look at the earliest adoptions of whatever they're doing. I think they also need to look at what they have to do manually and what's done manually now that can be automated, because that's where everything's going, of course. So if you, like you said with your example of writing the piece you did with ChatGPT, I think that's going to happen a lot more, and it's going to be on If somebody's spending, we used to spend hours doing PowerPoints. That's a good example. Any of those type of things, you should be able to find a way to automate it. If you haven't yet, it's coming. And I always say, if it for some reason you don't find something out there to do it, you either weren't looking hard enough or you're stepping on an opportunity to maybe build something yourself, even if you're not the technologist. Find the right people, put them together. So keep looking, always look for the least costly method and the automated method, so that you spend more of your time making deals than you spend having to do the work to put the communication out there, or to have to do the that's time you can be at the beach these days. So always talk to peer groups. Who's doing what? Who's doing things more simpler? That saves a lot of time as well.
100%. I appreciate that. And thanks, Jeremy, for everything today and your time. What's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with Jeremy Mapes if you have any offers for them or if they're looking to connect and follow your journey?
Sure. So they can go to mapesllc.com. So my name, M as in mother, A as in apple, P as in pizza, E as in Edward, S as in Sam, Larry, LarryCharlie.com. Or they can reach out to me online. My email address, jeremy@mapesllc.com. We keep it all simple. That's also good examples. If you're going to have a business, make sure everything's wrapped up in your name, so it makes it for everybody easy to find you, right? Very easy to
Exactly.
find.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, thanks again for your time today, Jeremy. I really enjoyed chatting to you.
Good speaking to you as well, Dylan. Yeah.